Evening, members, and to the public, and welcome to the first House Senate Tax Conference Committee of 2007. Should be an exciting year, and we in the House, of course, want to welcome the Senate and thank you for letting us use your facilities, and we're looking forward to a great year, Senator Bach.
So am I. I was thinking today of the makeup of this committee, and I think everybody in the room probably knows Senator Johnson was my senator when I was in the House, and maybe somebody from staff could check, but I'll bet it has been a long, long time since the Senate Tax Conference Committee has had two brand new chairs chairing it. Long time. So we'll see if we pass muster or not. Counsel, do we know how long? 1980 or?
80 would have been Senator Johnson's first year in the House.
But not two new ones. So it's likely been at least 25 years.
Senator
we'll
Bach,
for
of course,
an bit of
the House and Senate research staff, they'll figure that out for us and report back, because they're the people who know everything, and we all know that. And we do want to, of course, House conferees want to welcome all the senators, and Senator Bach, if it's okay, and everyone here should know that Senator Bach and I have met a couple times and talked about how we want to proceed this year, but we thought it would be good to have everybody introduce themselves. We have not only new members to the Tax Conference Committee, but we have new House DFL staff, there's new House Republican staff, there's new Senate staff, and we think it's worth everyone's time to just go around and introduce themselves so we all know who everybody is. And so maybe if it's all right, we could start with Representative Dabney.
Good evening, everyone. Representative Jim Dabney from South Minneapolis.
Who wants to say anything or just their names, Madam Chair?
Whatever you'd like.
I'm Representative Paul Markworth from Dilworth, and it is truly an honor to be on this tax committee and also serving with some former House members who have gone the other way, for better or for worse. But what is real encouraging in looking at both plans that come before the body here is that we at least have one goal that's common, and that's property tax relief. So that is very invigorating, encouraging to see. But it's an honor to be on this conference committee.
Thank you for that. And I probably should have said, too, in my intro is, you know, the themes of for the House this year are we are trying to have significant property tax cuts for Minnesota, and we're trying to make the tax system more progressive. So we know that we can work with the Senate to make both of those happen. Sure, go ahead.
I'm Lyndon Carlson, and being that we have two new chairs of the conference committee, I'll say I'm a junior member of the House, and represent Robbinsdale, Crystal, Golden Valley, and a little bit of New Hope.
Dean Simpson, I represent Ottertail, Wadena County, and this is my second or third time on a tax conference committee, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I thank Representative Lynchewski for asking me to be part of this, so thank you.
Good evening. I am Representative Denise Dietrich. I represent all of Champlin and a portion of Coon Rapids, and I am in my second term here at the legislature, and so obviously this is my first time sitting in on a taxes conference committee. And I will just let you all know, so you don't think I'm like missing the votes or something, I'm a non-voting member. But I am here to listen and learn. Thank you.
And if I may, before we go to Senator Larson, Senator Bach, I want everyone to know that I told Senator Bach early that he will regret that the Senate does not have a non-voting member of the Senate Conference Committee. We thought you would, and we know that Senator Pogemiller and Representative Kelleher have been in conversations about this concept of conferees and training non-voting members. And when you get to know Representative Dietrich, you will rue the day that you didn't have someone taking her on over there, because she is going to be a great addition to this process. So I think in a few days you'll wise up and you'll have someone right over there trying to counter her, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I was looking down your lineup and looking down ours here with Senator Skoy and myself and Senator Larson, and I was thinking maybe we all should just take partners in arm wrestle. And whoever wins writes the tax bill. We could save Representative Dietrich a lot of time.
You don't know. You've never arm wrestled me.
He did not.
Senator Mao.
May I point out, notice Senator Bach did not mention me in the arm wrestling.
I noted that, too. Sorry for the interruption, but I think you'll think our choice was wise with Representative Dietrich.
Well, thank you, Representative Lincheski. I'm Dan Larson from Bloomington, represent Richfield and South Minneapolis. And since Representative Marquardt asked the question if it's for better or for worse, the early returns are Representative Marquardt is for the better.
John Marty, represent Roseville and six other suburbs north of St. Paul.
Tom Bach, former member of the House and represent a large portion of the Arrowhead region in Minnesota. This is only my second time on the conference committee for taxes. I was a tax conferee in 1995, my first session, and you all know Senator Johnson was sitting in this chair at the time, and the Star Tribune did a little piece. Where are you, Star Tribune? And they said, too many cooks in the conference committee. But one thing about that conference committee I remember, I hope we have a little better luck this time, is we didn't actually arrive at a bill. And we didn't have a tax bill that year, my first time here. So I'm really hoping, Governor, if you're watching, I'm hoping we don't go 0 for 2.
I'm Rod Skoy, State Senator from District 2. And I have to say that I came in and served in the House with Ann and Senator Larson. We came in the House in 98. And glad to be here serving with you on this conference committee.
And I'm Mimo. I represent Senate District 67, which is the east side of St. Paul. I'm glad to be back and part of the conference committee.
Thank you for that. And Senator, how would you like to start here? I do not see the governor's office here. We've got Ms. Kadoon is here. We probably want to have her come and introduce herself. We've got the department and House and Senate staff. But we do want everyone to know that the governor's office is represented. If you want to tell us who you are, Ms. Kadoon, so everybody's following along that you're here for the governor.
Yeah, Beth Kadoon with the governor's office, and I do the tax policy and economic development, so I'll be kind of between two conference committees.
Thank you for that. And the department is here as well. Mr. Manson.
I'm Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue, and I'm glad you have Joel and Joanne at the table.
And I'm sure Commissioner Ines will be here a lot too as well. I don't know where he is now, but we'll see a lot of him this year. So with that, Senator, you want to start with your staff and direct us where we should go here?
Let's start with our head counsel.
Okay.
I'm Joanne Zoff from the Office of Senate Counsel Research and Fiscal Analysis.
Jack Allison, Senate Counsel.
Susan Baumash with Senate Counsel Research. I'm a fiscal analyst for the Michelle Allen, Senate Counsel.
Chris Reifus.
Okay. Is that everybody, Senator?
Yep.
Okay. And on the House, we'll start with Mr. Michael.
I'm Joel Michael from House Research.
You sure got a lot of the whole staff.
There's twice as many of us.
We have one other partisan, Kristen.
Thank you.
Did I miss anybody? We don't have as many. Is Bill here? Where's Bill Hyde? He's running the tape back there somewhere.
We'll find him. We'll introduce him if we see him.
Alexander
Broad,
Department of Finance.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And Senator Bach and I spoke about how we would start today. And if everybody's set, I think what we're just going to do is start working through the side-by-side Senator, did you have a preference? Did you want to just start on the first page, or did you want to start with technical items? We can go either way.
Why don't we start right with Article 1, and we'll just kind of get a little overview of what's in here.
And I think, Senator, if we're going to do that, I think we will anticipate that maybe staff will be moving around here in these chairs and walking through the articles that they need, so, yeah. Or joining us at the front. I don't know if Ms. Hines would like, or Ms. Baker would like to join us. I'm not sure who would like to take the homestead, the first article. He's pointing at Mr. Mike. So, Mr. Michael's right here. Would you like someone to join us for Article 1, or are you set?
Yeah, I'm just debating. Is it easier to three ring
punches? Ready then, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Article 1 is one of the key elements of the House's property tax relief provisions, and this is the new homestead credit state refund program that replaces the existing homeowner PTR and the homestead market value credit for farms, both for farms, for farm homes and homes. Essentially, Section 1 of that article phases out the existing homestead market value credit over a three-year period. In the first year for pay 2008, taxpayers would still get 100% of what they would receive under existing law. Then in 09, it dropped to 60%, 30% in 2010, and the credit's gone in 2011. And during this phase-out time, the credit would still be allowed on the tax statements just as it is now. But the taxpayer would take that credit and enter it on the new homestead credit market value refund form so that they would get either the greater of that or the income-adjusted homestead credit market value refund. Section 2 just makes some technical changes in, or not, sort of conforming changes in the language of the law that dictates what's in the property tax statement that goes to the property owner, eliminating the references to the existing state aid programs, and then giving the commissioner flexibility to dictate the form of that statement during this transition period. Section 3 modifies the definition of the homeowner property tax that qualifies for the new refund program. Section 4 is an increase in the renter's PTR that basically expands this credit by expanding the income bracket so that more renters would qualify at higher income levels and that they would receive larger amounts. So the current maximum income limit goes up from about $50,000 to $60,000. The brackets stay the same except that they're widened. And then the maximum is also increased from $1,430 to $1,500. Section 5 is a change to the targeting program to make it clear that the targeting program will essentially not apply to offset increases that result from elimination of the homestead market value credit. Section 6 is the new refund program. And essentially what this does is it takes the existing PTR program and changes the qualifying threshold from a variable threshold that ranges from 1% to 4% and makes that a flat 2% for all taxpayers. So essentially any taxpayer whose property tax exceeds 2% of their household income would potentially qualify for a refund under this so long as their income, their household income, is under $150,000. The credit percentages are, in the PTR terminology, the copay percentages are essentially somewhat more generous than under the existing PTR program, but those percentages decline, so you get a smaller percentage as your income rises up to the $150,000 limit. Section 7 is just a cross-reference change. Section 8 resets the inflation indexing to take into account the new refund schedule that's in place. And Section 9 repeals the existing homeowner program that is being replaced by this new homestead credit market value program.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, members, on the Senate side, we increase the homestead market value credit, as you see in the on the top of page 2 there, so that it would be equal to 0.4% of the first 86,000 of market value to a maximum of 344, and then it's phased out at the rate of 0.1%. And with respect to the property tax refund, we increase the maximum refunds and reduce the copays across all of the income tax or the income brackets. We don't make any changes with respect to the rent to the property tax refund for renters. It may appear that way, but that change is only to reflect the changes that have been indexed for the renter schedule.
Is that it then, Ms. Ong? Okay. Senator Bach, should we move on to Article 2 or?
Works for me.
Okay. Article 2. And I don't know if Ms. Dalton is going to join us for that. Ms. Dalton, yes. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Article 2, Section 1 is a change to the small city need formula in LGA. That was the one formula that was not updated in 2003 because of time constraints, and this replaces the old formula with a new formula that's greatly simplified, and it's between $300 and $500 per capita based on population. It also changes the inflation factor applied to the need measure in the formula. Currently, that need is adjusted for inflation since 2003, and this takes the inflation back to 2000, which is the year that the data used in constructing the formula all came from. Section 2 is the city aid base, otherwise known as the grandfathered aid, and it provides additional money to four cities: the city of Newport, $75,000 annually for 5 years, an additional $30,000 in 2008 only for the city of Taylor's Falls, a permanent increase of $140,000 a year to the city of Rockville, and a permanent increase of $100,000 to the city of Browns Valley.
Madam Chair, in the Senate bill, Section 7 of Article 6 goes back to the city aid base from the year 2003, at the time that the bulk of the aid base was eliminated. The Senate retains the aid base adjustments that have been granted by the legislature specifically since that time, and we make adjustments for Taylor's Falls and Manoman are made permanent. The small city aid base is currently $6 per capita. That's increased to $9 per capita. And Section 8, Madam Chair, county tax base equalization aid. The Senate made a couple changes in the formula since that equalization aid formula was enacted. There haven't been any adjustments for inflation. This increases the per capita amount from $185 to $215, and there's a reduction in the tax rate from 9.45 to 8.33%.
Madam Chair, Section 3 on the House side, County Transition Aid, restores the transition aid part of county program aid that had been under current law. It expires after 2007, so this makes it permanent at the level it had been in 2007, and it adds a one-time payment to Pine County of $250,000.
Madam Chair, Senate Section 9 makes the same change in transition aid, except that we do not make the one-time payment to Pine County.
Madam Chair, the one-time payment to Pine County is an alternative to allowing them a sales tax exemption on construction costs for their judicial center. Section 4, we remove the Taconite aid offset from the city LGA formula. This is
Senate also.
Section 5, we make a number of changes to the final calculation of city aid. The main one is that city aid is now, the formula portion of city aid will now be based half on the city factors from the previous year and half on the factors for the current year. This is a volatility fix that was proposed by the cities. It changes the limits on annual increases for 2008 only from 10% in the previous year to 25%, and this is to allow the extra $60 million in LGA under the city under the House proposal to actually go to the cities that the formula says it should go to, instead of having it go to some cities 1 year and then bounce back the next year. It also introduces a new minimum maximum cut in LGA, which is now the lesser of $15 per capita or 10% of the previous year's levy, and this was a proposal, again, by the city organizations. And for 2008 only, it essentially holds all small cities harmless from any aid losses due to the transition to the new small city LGA formula.
Madam Chair, Section 12 of the Senate bill provides that for 2008 only, no city's LGA will be less than it received in 2007. The Senate bill also includes the volatility fix from the city organization. And the Senate, rather than a percent of levy cap, went to $56 per capita cap on LGA increases plus the $9 increase for the small cities that was under Section 7.
Excuse me. Maybe Senator Scoyer or Senator Markwart wants to jump in here, but I just this provision here now, ours and yours, I just want to understand that a little bit better. The 56 per capita on the LGA, can you help us understand how you arrived at that? Was that backing into a number or what you might have been trying to address there? Senator Scoyer?
Yeah, Madam Chair, the per capita really was an effort to try to end up with distribution statewide, and we were not dealing with the per capita of the areas that had such large populations tended to get a significantly higher percentage of the dollars. So we were trying to raise that. That's the reason we use the per capita.
Thank you. Did you?
Spreads more money to more cities.
Spreads the money out.
So would it have been that the need would have been so high in some places that it would have disproportionately taken more of the money? That?
Well, we were having trouble with regard to the formula in need, in that we were getting these carve-outs. And, you know, when you're doing these carve-outs, there was also an issue with regard to how they're being distributed. And this was our answer to that. Maybe Mr. Paulson would be helpful also on this.
Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, the per capita distribution was an effort to make the distribution more uniform across the state, especially going back to the 2003 aid base. That change affected certain cities significantly more than others, and it was an attempt to make it more uniform distribution.
Thank you. Representative Markwart, did you want to jump in here? Thoughts? You've got a completely, and this came out of Representative Markwart's property tax division report, and Senator Bach and senators, you should know that what we did in the House Tax Committee is we took the property tax division report as is. We decided not to rework the work of the property tax division, and so we've taken the work of Representative Markwart wholeheartedly. So maybe Representative Markwart, you want to comment on your thoughts on your selections with city aid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Overall, or just on Section 5?
Just this Section 5 versus 12.
Well, what we did is, of course, back in 2005 when we added that $48 million, but we were still capped down to that 10%. It was like a balloon. It went out, and it went to certain cities right away. And then, of course, it was like the wave coming, and then the wave had to go back, and they lost as things kind of shook out. So we loosened up the balloon from 10% to 25%. So now that will flow a lot easier to all of these cities as we pump in new money into a system. But I, Madam Chair, I don't know if I'm quite following the cap on the per capita here. And I mean, if I saw runs, I'd maybe be able to see what it does, but maybe someone wants to tell us what it does, and I'd understand it a little better.
Representative Lencheski, you guys don't have enough money in your bill to worry about having to put caps in.
So
if you had more money, you'd see runs that you'd understand why we did it.
We will get to the runs, okay, but okay. I do think those of us who were here last year, Representative Simpson and Representative Moi and Senator Skoy, recall that money was last year, the year before, coming in at the end without readjusting the caps created a lot of problems for a lot of cities in the state, and the volatility is something that we're both addressing. So that's common ground there. It looks like we're doing it differently, but we don't want to replicate that problem again, and so we can continue to try to figure out. Those runs will help us when we get that far.
And
Senator Skoy.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And with regard to the volatility, we actually have two parts of our bill that deal with that. One is where we have taken the two-year average for what you receive, and you would receive last year's appropriation and this year, so it actually takes a two-year average for what you get in this year, which is an effort to address the volatility, and I'm wondering if the House doesn't do something comparable. But the other thing that happens when you go back to including a percentage of the grandfathers, that really does reduce volatility, and over time that percentage will shrink as more money gets going in. But that's part of our thought as we went back to 2003, is to address some of the issues that we saw last year and in other years, and it also does reduce the volatility.
And I think, you know, the House, I probably the issue we'd have with how much grandfather do we go back to, but you're saying on the look back, the two-year look back, that's for a POA phenomenon only. Is that right, Senator Skoy, or is that ongoing? Just POA?
I'd have to
or PO9.
PO9, I believe.
Maybe Mr. Paulson knows.
Madam Chair, yes. The averaging begins with AIDS payable in 2009.
Then it just stops? Two-year look back?
Oh, it goes forward.
Oh, it's forever or two-year look back?
Two-year
look back.
Okay. It is ongoing.
Thank you for that. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Mr. Paulson and I believe that the volatility fix, we both have the same volatility fix that was essentially proposed by the League, although we picked up an extra cap that they didn't pick up. However, they don't start their volatility fix until 2009, and we started in 2008, but that may be because we have fairly significantly different appropriations, and because they're adding $330 million back into the grandfather.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Representative Chesky, you spoke so eloquent of Representative Markwart's work. And you took his. I'm just wondering, did the rest of your committee think that? I'm just wondering when his article came to the full committee, were there any amendments to it from the committee before it went to the floor?
Senator Bach, I don't think there was a single amendment on LGA. Not a single one.
On the overall property tax article.
Representative Markwart?
Madam Chair, I think there were two in the division.
In the division, yes.
And one dealt with limited market value, was reinstated, and the other one is on the 4D. It was from 25% down to 20%, the Mullery amendments. I think that was it. So it was pretty clean.
So, Senator Bach, the 4D change, we're close to you guys. You're going to 25 or going to 20. Senator Miles is very interested in that. But we took Representative Lanning and Representative Paymar have worked diligently on limited market value. And I should tell you, Senator Bach, I opposed that provision vociferously, and they put it on anyhow. Representative Markwart opposed it, too. But we're here to fight for the House position.
Representative Lencheski. Senator Skoy and I don't like it either.
Well, our conferees like it.
It'll be up to these other six people to decide.
They get to decide. Yes, the House is holding for Representative Paymire and Representative Lanning and the work of the division. Representative Dietrich was a part of that as well. And so that'll be an interesting piece. But yes, that was a change.
Madam Chair, can I ask Representative Dietrich what she thinks of limited market
value?
Yes,
Representative Dietrich, did you want to weigh in on limited market value?
Well,
Is it a good tax policy?
I really do think it is. And we had a citizens tax hotline and website, and everybody talked about their market value rising. And so I think anytime you can limit market value.
See, she's fighting for the division as already. And you know what? You're going to, again, regret. You don't have someone right there as good as Representative Dietrich.
Representative Lencheski.
Wait until we get into all kinds of minutia.
She clearly is here to learn.
She's here to teach as well.
And Senator Skoy's division article that came to the Senate Tax Committee. Senator Skoy, any amendments?
I don't believe there were any amendments.
I believe the work was so well there were no amendments.
Was there limited market value in there, Senator Skoy?
There is not limited market value.
Well, we're fighting for it. We're going to convince you.
And it was never offered. And it has been in the Senate tax bill in previous years.
I know that. Representative Marquardt?
Well, I guess it sounds like, Madam Chair, their plan is flawless. Except a few details we'll talk about a little bit later.
Oh, Madam Chair, really is just an effort to prevent these property tax shifts that we all do not like.
And a lot of work ahead.
How many members on your committee?
Senator Bach, I think there's 27 on the tax committee.
11 on the division.
26, I can hear someone saying it's 26 and 11 on the division. We've got a lot of people involved, and not everybody who sits on the division sits on the full tax committee. Those aren't all duplications.
Really?
Yeah. So we've had a lot of House members bipartisanly.
Sounds like you might have had a little too much input.
We can't have enough. You know what, Senator Bach? Representative Marquardt's committee, you know what they did? They started a citizen hotline, and they had people from all around the state call in and give us their best tips on how to cut property taxes, and that's what our bill does. And we did have a lot of input. We had the whole state weighing in, and we're going to have Representative Marquardt bring his book of comments to this group here, and all the senators can take a look. It's a big, thick book of letters and calls and input from Minnesotans across the state of Minnesota.
And you picked six ideas.
No.
Who were the
Senator Bach? We have six ideas that were repeated over and over in our Citizens Omnibus Bill that's incorporated in here. But we, our overall property tax new state refund program is the product of the net of the book, which is saying let's base property taxes on the ability.
So it's one of the six things you incorporated, or I don't know.
Many. We'll let Representative Marquardt. We're going to make sure he comes with that book so we can all take a look. Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, I'll bring that. There were six ideas we put into a citizen omnibus bill, but as Representative Lencheski mentioned, the homestead credit pay refund was kind of the total consensus of what came out of that book as a seventh idea or another one. But that one was very pervasive over and over again, was especially from seniors on fixed incomes and young families, and talking about how Social Security was only going up 2 or 3% a year, but property taxes rising 20, 30, 40% a year, and how income was not keeping up with property taxes. And that we heard time and time again. So that's where that came out of, the new 2% homestead credit.
Thank you. Staff, you want to take us to the next place? We on page 5.
Section 6 of the House bill is reinstatement of town LGA, and it goes back roughly to kind of where we were prior to its elimination. It's $3 per capita LGA amount for every township that levies, which essentially takes out the unorganized townships.
And, Madam Chair, Section 10 of the Senate bill provides an aid equal to 40% of the HACA that was received by townships in 2001.
Madam Chair?
Yeah, Senator Bach.
by this one provision, you can tell that the Senate tax chair is rural and the House tax chair is city. Because I believe the Senate provision has about a $12 million cost.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And the House brought less than three.
Well, Senator Bach, I'm not sure about that. I think if you look at the ratio of all of them, I don't know that we're that different. I think there's a lot of common ground here. You've just got a lot more aid in all these areas. So I don't know. We'd have to match up. I think we're the exact same proportion of LGA and county aid. And I'm not sure where we are in the township, but we could ask staff. Are you guys at 12 or 11 million?
And we're at three. We're a little
so
under.
So we're a little under. We're a little under, but we're really close. Right?
Well, I hope we get really close.
You know, Senator Bach, though, I noticed you've got references to HACA in here. What does that mean for the House? to see HACA in there?
Just trying to help.
I thought that was gone.
We're trying to help the little people.
Okay. We're just trying to understand it. I don't know if Senator Skoy wants us to understand. 2001 HACA, incorporating that into it's definitions, you know, we haven't described anything within terms of HACA, so maybe you can help us.
Madam Chair, thank you. We are going back to the Homestead Ag credit that has been so successful in making one Minnesota a viable, good state to live in, and we think that the tax policies that brought the Minnesota miracle should take another look at their successes and see if we shouldn't build on the successes that they had and move forward again.
You know, Madam Chair, the townships really did get a raw deal in that 2001 tax bill. I mean, they lost all their HACA, almost $30 million. And that was the year we did the school takeover. And they were basically told, I think probably publicly, you just go ahead and levy it back. We're taking it all away, and go ahead and levy it back because people's property taxes are coming down so much with the school takeover that nobody's even going to notice. And really was a kind of one of the more unfair things we think that happened in the 2001 bill. We're just trying to get 40% of it back. Because they did turn around and levy back what they could.
Senator Skoy, yeah.
And Madam Chair, you know, the townships provide a lot of road maintenance in the state of Minnesota. They've got a significant number of road miles. One of the things that the Property Tax Division and the Senate did look long and hard at is the causes of some of these property tax increases that we're going to work to reduce this year. And to be honest, transportation is a big part of it. Counties are levying for county roads, and townships are levying for county roads, or for township roads. And the state is not helping out with the CASA for counties because we haven't been able to see the increased revenue at that level. And we really think that it's important for the state to play a role in this. So this is part of our property tax reductions here.
And I guess I would just point out, and we'll hear from Representative Marquardt, you know, the thing, though, we do have to remember, and I agree with you, Senator Bach, that the townships got a really bad deal. They did. We need to correct that. However, referencing the HACA, we have to recall that townships did receive market value credit, so that there was some attempt to address that, and I know you're increasing it in your bill, and I know the governor is, too. So I don't know how that, when we get to the run, will all play out, but Senator Skoy, you raised a really good issue. It's been Representative Earhart in the House who's got us all thinking about when you don't fund transportation, it becomes a property tax increase. And I think you're making that point. And Senator Larson's probably your expert on your side of the aisle on transportation funding. But we in the House heard from Representative Earhart, who did a good job in linking for us the failing to fund transportation actually works out to be a property tax increase. So we do realize townships are putting a lot of roads in for Minnesota, and then they're trying to come up with the resources to do it. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And you just mentioned one point I was going to make, but the other one I want to make is, Chair Bach, you'd be very interested to note that Madam Chair made a very impassionate speech in defense of local government aid the other day, I think Wednesday or Thursday, on the House floor. So you can't say who was the chair, and whether or not it's rural or metro, because it was a very, very nice speech. As a LGA proponent myself, she did LGA proud that day.
Good job, Representative Markford. I was just wondering if the House chair represented any townships.
I don't, but you know there's a farm in Bloomington. It's right next to the Mall of America. You might be interested in that provision later.
That's in my district.
Yeah, so, Representative Markort, could you repeat what you just said? I didn't hear that.
Senator Larson.
You mean on the end?
You know, in all seriousness, Madam Chair, I was reminded again this morning how critical township government is in rural areas of the state. I came out of what you could argue is the best restaurant between here and the Iron Range. There's the greatest little restaurant at Willow River in Senator Lowry's district, exit 205, and they have got the best breakfast. And you can see I don't skip many meals. But as I was coming out of there this morning on my way down early in the morning, the Willow River fire truck went by, lights flashing. And it was interesting, they turned north on 35E, and the first thought was they were probably going to a car fire, which you see quite often when there's an accident, there's a car fire. And I was reminded how important it is, that long stretch of road from the Twin Cities north, all the different townships that you go through, and how important those little fire departments are. So I got a nice reminder this morning on the way down. And we all know, doesn't matter if you're in Willow River or if you're in Bloomington, a fire truck costs about the same amount of money.
Yep.
And that's always the challenge. And it's part of what local government aid's about, and it's certainly what trying to help townships is about, is trying to provide those core services. And when you don't have a lot of tax capacity, that's difficult.
I know Representative Simpson and Markort are our side here who really understand those needs better than anyone, but Representative Dabney understands the needs of the inner cities, and we've got a few suburban members, and we have really tried hard. I want every senator to know, to make this a very balanced statewide property tax relief bill, and we're very serious about it. We know the need is great in all parts of the state, so we really are trying to not do what's happened in the past a lot, is pit one part of the state against the other, and we think we've found a really good way to do that, and we hope we're going to convince you. To staff, thank you.
Section 7 is the appropriation amounts for LGA County Program Aid. The House increases the LGA appropriation by $60 million in 2008 to $545 million. It increases the County Program Aid by $24 million, which is split evenly, $12 million apiece to each of the two parts of County Program Aid. It also provides for inflation to the aid programs beginning in 2009. For cities, the increase is 1% annually unless the cities reach consensus and the legislature enacts a new LGA formula. And in that case, the cities will go to the old inflation rate that existed prior to 2003, which is the implicit price of for state and local government purchases capped at 2.5% and 5%. For counties, the county aid increase will be whatever the city aid increase is for 2009 and 2010. However, regardless of what cities do, beginning in calendar year 2011, county program aid will go to the old inflation factor of between 2.5%
and 5%. Madam Chair, the Senate provisions, Section 13, local government aid, the appropriation is increased by $150 million. Section 14 increases the appropriation for county program aid by $60 million, which is also split evenly between the two portions of county program aid. The Senate does not index the appropriation for local government aid, but the Senate bill does index the appropriation for county program aid.
Section 8 deals with land utilization project land, or LUP land, and it basically increases the amount paid on LUP lands located in wildlife management areas. inflation adjusted 75 cents per acre right now to $3 per acre. Section 9 is provides for the distribution of that money.
Madam Chair, the Senate provisions are the same.
Section 10, I will let Mr. Hines describe.
Madam Chairman, Section 10 is a provision that states that for new utility rule is being implemented, that the change that is making in each jurisdiction's tax base for aid purposes will be recognized 1 year earlier than it normally would be. Normally, there's a one-year lag between when the aid formula realizes there's a change in the tax base and when it actually occurs in law because of the sales ratio study. So this accelerates it and says if there's a drop of 40% in the jurisdiction's tax base of the utility value, that that'll be picked up in their LGA calculation for the payable year that the tax base loss occurs. And Section 11 is just the corresponding provision to that for county and city aid. So the Section 10 was the school aid part of that, and then Section 11 was for counties and cities.
Madam Chair, the Senate does not have those provisions.
Section 12 deals with the issue of the casino being removed off of the property tax rolls in Monoman County. The House provides an additional one-time payment of $250,000 to Monoman County in 2008, and then it provides that the school district, county, and city tax bases used in all the aid formulas will immediately pick up that property tax loss, even though that property is not officially off the property tax rolls at this point.
And Madam Chair, Section 17 of the Senate bill makes permanent the appropriation that was made in 2007 to Monoman County City and School District. The county receives $450,000, the city $80,000, school district $70,000. The payments are reduced by any payment in lieu of tax that may be made by the owner of the affected property.
Section 13 is a study of the city local government aid program. The House basically asks the Commissioner of Revenue to work with interested city organizations on developing a new formula. Most of the work needs to be done by the city groups. The revenue is only required to report on the results of that effort and do the final model of the last proposal. And that report is due February 1, 2008.
And Madam Chair, the Senate also includes a study of each local government's in this case, it is a group that includes five members appointed by each chair of the Senate and House Tax Committees. The Property Tax Division chairs will be co-chairs, and the report is due December 15th, 2008.
Senator Bach, I have a question on this provision. Maybe Representative Marquardt, you could tell senators what your thoughts were there in trying to motivate the city groups, but I would be interested in hearing as well from Senator Skoy a little more about these five members, are these all elected members or just folks that the Property Tax Division chairs pick, and just kind of what the differences are here, because it looks like we're both trying to do the same thing, which is trying to get these formulas worked out. But Senator Skoy?
Yeah, Madam Chair, what the Senate was attempting to do was to have members of the Senate and the House work and meet with all the affected parties, so the members of the Senate and the House would be members of the committee. They would convene. I mean, that is the one power that the legislators have. Bring the affected people in and try to reach some understandings and agreement about need and how we're going to deal with the formula. As we work through this year, there were a number of provisions that there are groups that were trying to make changes that would affect them, and we want to spend a little more time looking at that. I did look at what you have here in the House, and I was thinking, well, maybe the Commissioner of Revenue would have better luck reaching consensus than the legislators. We could ask Mr. Manson what he thinks the Commissioner would think of that, but we could certainly explore that as an option.
Well, and Representative Marquardt, before you jump in there, I mean, I think, Senator Bach, I want to let you and all your confreres know that this, you know, the House made a conscious effort to not open the LGA formula wide open. We thought it was too much to take on the first year. We felt we needed to address the volatility, so we've done that, and we've done some township money, and we've made a few other changes. But we realize that I'm sure you've all heard from all of your conferees, have heard from the Metro Cities about their issues, from the Greater Coalition. There's a number of other groups kind of hanging out there who want us to look again, and we are open to that. We just felt in this year we couldn't, so it looks like you're sort of making the same decision in that you didn't bring it forward this year. But Representative Marquardt took a different approach, but I think I just want you to know, and particularly as a property tax division chair, that we do know that there is work to be done on the formula, and we just didn't want to do it this year. So, Representative Marquardt.
So, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you're exactly right. I mean, we're trying to get to the same point, and I always thought to get peace in the valley is to bring all the various groups together right on the onset and get them to go over the geographical differences, and then when they come up with a plan, then just the Department of Revenue would just report on that, and then would bring it to the policy board, and we would work it out politically from there. But I think any successful plan is going to have the okay from all the city groups. So we just went to that step first, and that's the main thing. Madam Chair, if I might.
Talk about your motivating factor in your provision.
Well, the motivating factor then is we have in our local government aid, all the aids, local government aid, county program aid, and township aid, and indexing worked into that. But the index is only 1% in the first year, and then if the city groups come to a conclusion, then it will go to that regular implicit price deflator between 2.5 and 5%. So there is an incentive for the city groups to come together, which means the full index would take place in that. Madam Chair, if I might, on this Article 2 before we leave
yes.
it, just I know under the Senate side, under Section 8, where you're looking at changing that county tax paid equalization aid a little bit, you're basically increasing the aid. It would be very advantageous if we could see the runs on all of this stuff, LGA and especially the county program aid from both, because I know when we were looking at doing some of that, it really changed geographically the distribution of the county program aid just by making some little changes like that. And so it would just be good to kind of see how it turned out with the runs and so forth. So, Madam Chair, if we maybe in the next meeting could have the runs available for LGA. I know in this book the LGA for the health side is in here, I believe.
And Senator Skoy, I'm sure you have all that, and I think if Senator Bach is agreeable, I think that's a good idea to have everybody try to look at the LGA runs for the bills and the county aid and township and put it all together. You know, we of course factor in our school levy changes as well. Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, and we just thought it was important to recognize that inflation is occurring. We were trying to adjust our formulas to recognize that. We'd be happy to provide you with the runs, but I think the basic policy question here is that we recognize that there are inflation is occurring out in the world, and we should be recognizing that in our formulas. And with regard to the LGA, that is one of the reasons that we ended up going back to where we were in 03 is we thought that we should be making some adjustments, but we didn't think that we would get it all done this session, and we thought that going back, we'd take some of the volatility out, solve some of the problems that we were seeing by doing that at the same time. But with regard to the runs, if Senator Bach is fine with it, we certainly would share that.
Well, Senator Bach, so is it fair to say, or Senator Skoy, that you index the county tax base equalization aid, but not LGA?
Well, Madam Chair, we did not fix the formula for LGAs, so when we do that, we'll be happy to look at index.
Thank you.
Sorry, go ahead. Before we move off of the LGA study group, can we agree to the Senate's wisdom of having the report back by December 15, 2008? I don't quite understand the urgency for all of these people to tie up their entire summer working on LGA so they can get a report back to us by February of 08. When we're not going to do anything with it till the next budget cycle.
Well, I think maybe we thought they didn't have to start till after the summer if we gave them till February. So they could have their summer. I don't know. Representative Marquardt?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the idea was so that next year when we come back, we could start discussing that. And the problem is you can never really change the LGA formula unless you have new money to put in, because then you always have the winners and losers, and it's politically really tough to do. But we thought at least if we could get something going, then we wouldn't be spending all that time. Because once the budget year starts in 09, then things just move so quickly to try to get formulas. Everything tends to be rushed. So if we thought, you know, we could do the kind of the political thing next year and what will work if we can add more money. And so it was an idea we could have a legislative session to kind of look and scrutinize it a little bit.
Do you have to go golfing this summer? Is it, what are you doing? Because I see it's going to, if you guys prevail, it's going to be legislators. See, if we prevail, we don't have to do it.
My fear is, Madam Chair, that we'll put a report out there in February of 08 and give all the disenfranchised parties an additional year before the actual appropriations come up to kind of build some momentum for the fact that they feel like they didn't quite get a fair shake.
Good point. Well, I'll keep thinking on that.
Maybe when we get there, we can ask the cities how much time they think they need.
That's a good idea.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, I have a funny feeling that they will fill up the time that is allotted, but maybe the project will be better if we give them a little more time to work on it.
Madam Chair, our experience in the Senate is when you take a little longer, you generally get a better outcome. And if I, before we leave this article, you know, the Senate is still feeling a little bit stung about the LGA changes that were thrust upon us in 2003. We didn't participate in those. If you remember how the 2003 session concluded, there were three Democratic members of the Senate that voted for the budget in 2003, and relative to those LGA changes, we don't feel like we participated very much. So we thought it might be better to go back and to where we were and have a good process where this committee works out the proposed changes rather than the way they were done in 2003, which wasn't a very open and public process, I don't think, the way the final bills were put together.
Thank you for that. We're going to go on to Article 3 here. Got a lot going on, and we might want to have Senator Skoy and Senator Marquardt just Representative Marquardt just jump in as we go, because I do think this provision, this article is actually a lot of individual member bills, and some cases we line up and some we don't, and I think it's probably more important for us to hear particularly about things where you put bills in and we didn't, or vice versa. So Ms. Baker.
Members of the committee, page 6, section 1, it's a provision that allows a town that received payment in lieu of taxes in 06 and then incorporated as a city to continue to receive future allocations. And this has to do with DNR payments for public hunting area and game refuge. And it's only the city of Columbus is the only one that will qualify.
Madam Chair, the Senate has the same provision. The language is slightly different.
Madam Chair, we already know more about this than we want to know.
Aye.
Madam Chair, the next few provisions, sections 1, 2, and 5 of the Senate bill, that I believe was Senator Wergen in the Senate. It's apparently also in the E-12 bill in the House, and it has to do with maximum effort loan school districts and changing the sales ratio to be based on estimated market value rather than the current system.
The next provision, which is section 2, has to do with the sales ratio study, and what it really is trying to address is in the case of ag lands, and it came to our attention that it was more in the case of Green Acres property, that they're trying to determine what sales really get left in the study. And what this requires is that when ag land that's enrolled in Green Acres is sold, the purchaser and the purchaser changes the use in a way that results in a classification change, then the sales ratio study has to take it into account. And yet a change in status from ag homestead to ag non-homestead or vice versa does not, that's not a change in class. So you wouldn't throw it out just because it was ag homestead and it went to ag non-homestead, for instance.
Madam Chair, the Senate has a similar provision. The Senate provision applies to all properties, not just Green Acres. And there's not an exclusion for changing from homesteaded to non-homestead. That would also possibly be included.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Senate does have a provision dealing with the sales ratio that asks the department to put the ag land, the land that is go into the sales ratio of the category it's going into, not the category it's coming from.
That the rural vacant land.
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, that is section 6, which is on the page 8, and the House and Senate both have that provision, and it's asking the person that is buying the property when they do the certificate of value to indicate if there's a changed use. So the only difference there is the timing of when those start. I think the House and Senate are a little different, but that's on there.
I jumped a little ahead there.
Mm-hmm. Section 3 is, that was Representative Murphy, and that has to do with modular homes that are used as models by dealers, and it exempts the modular home for up to 5 years if it meets these criterias of if it's owned by the dealer and a single-family model home and used exclusively as a model and not connected to any utilities except electricity and not situated on temporary foundation.
Madam Chair, the Senate section is the same.
Next provision, section 4, is that was Representative Gunther's provision. That is an electric generation facility, and it's one that's being proposed to be built in the city of Elk River. And this is the same language that has been very, very typical for the last 15 years of exempting attached machinery and personal property, and it makes it very clear exactly what qualifications it has to meet in order to get this exemption.
And Madam Chair, the Senate is the same provision with a different effective date. The Senate provision is effective in payable 2008.
Section 5 has to do with apprenticeship training facilities. This is an exemption for property that's used exclusively to operate state-approved apprenticeship program through the Department of Labor and Industry. Owned by a 501c3 nonprofit, provided the program participants receive no compensation. This is much tighter than what the original bill that was introduced by Representative Solberg. And also, this particular, there was a change made that it's not retroactive. This is effective for payable 2008.
Madam Chair, the argument to include the word nonprofit. I think what we were trying to get at is a school is a school, you know, and an apprenticeship training provides classroom instruction, hands-on training. It's a school that these apprentices go to, and I don't quite understand why we had a 501c3.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I think the issue that was raised here is that if it was a school per se, it would get exempted under the school category or the exemption for school property, and that if it wasn't kept pretty tight, that this might open the door for a lot of other facilities that might qualify. I think the department weighed in some on this and was concerned about what might come in, and so the language was tightened up.
I think, Madam Chair, it might be helpful, and I think Labor and Industry could probably tell us how many state or federally approved apprenticeship programs that there are in the state. I mean, there's a limited number of programs, a limited number of participants, and it might help us to know how many buildings might potentially be impacted, how many have training facilities, some share training facilities. And
maybe, I don't know if the Department of Mr. Manson Jansen wants to comment on that. I guess we didn't think about it in that way. We were thinking about similar facilities that could make similar arguments that may not be public or nonprofit. And so Representative Solbert was okay with the change, so that's where we went to, but we're open on that. Mr. Jansen, did you?
I don't have anything to
okay.
add to that.
Okay. Maybe we can get that, because Senator Bach, you know about that. I don't. I guess I'm not familiar with state or federal. I guess we don't. I don't know that we have the federal language in ours at all. I think we just said state approved. So, Mr. Paulson, did you want to?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess you've mentioned most of the differences. The state, the Senate does allow both state and federal approved programs. Senate language does not require ownership by a nonprofit and does not require that participants receive no compensation. Senate provision is retroactive to taxes payable in 2006. And Madam Chair, the next provision is on the Senate side, and it provides a property tax exemption for monosloped roofs installed over a feedlot or manure storage area.
I can't believe the House didn't do that.
Representative, or Senator Bach, who was your author? I think we had Representative Gazelka, is that right, maybe?
Hamilton.
Who's your author for monosloped roofs? We were happy to learn what those were, actually, in the
committee. I believe it's Senator Coobley. Is it?
Senator Coobley. He convinced you that you needed those roofs over the manure?
Monoslope roof. Madam Chair, I'm familiar with that because us of Finnish ancestry, every good Finlander has a lean-to off of his roof, and it's a monoslope, so I'm very familiar with a one-sided roof because we like add them onto our garages after we build new garages. It's not that you couldn't make the garage big enough, but everybody just has to have a little roof off the side of their garage.
Interesting. Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, Section 6 we've already talked about. That was the one that Senator Scoy asked about. Section 7 is the limited market value provision, and that's the one that the Chair also mentioned, which was an amendment from Paymer and Lanning. And, in effect, it extended limited market value by 2 years so that the increases of the 15% or 25% of the difference, which is what is in effect for this year, is just for 2 more years before it's phased out. So it'll be phased out in 2012 instead of 2010.
And, Madam Chair, the Senate did not extend limited market value. The only change that was made was to include the small resorts within the existing limited market value provision.
Representative Simpson, did you introduce this bill in the House? How did you miss this? Did you?
Yes, Madam Chair, I did.
You did?
And, don't we have this in here in our bill somewhere?
Resorts? I think we did other things
for
resorts.
Yeah, we
did.
Yeah,
but not this particular.
We did classification.
Right. Yeah.
And Representative Simpson knows everything the Senate would like to know about resorts.
I'm glad about that.
Yeah, he's our go-to person. We didn't put limited market value in for. I just heard that comment about how limited market value. We don't need that. Now here it is for resorts.
That's a jump.
You've got to explain that to us.
My seasonal resorts are also homesteads where I live. Representative Simpson, do you have a lot of seasonal resorts that are also homesteads?
Yeah, Senator Bach, yes, we do. Quite a number of them. I would probably say majority of them are that way. Yeah.
The Senate's got a pretty good provision, don't they?
But Representative Dietrich wants you to remember that she's for limited market value for everybody.
Yep.
That's the House's position. So we have to keep thinking about limited market value. You don't have any strong limited market value folks on the Senate Tax Committee who want to keep it going forever?
Not that speak up.
Madam Chair, has there been a point raised about shifts in limited market value earlier by the Senate side?
No, Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, yes, and we've looked at the importance of the mom-and-pop resorts, and we're pretty sure that the people that live in those jurisdictions would accept such a small and modest shift to protect such a valuable resource in their community. Huh.
Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, members, Section 8, the House brings back or reestablishes this old house in a version that is similar to what the original provision that was in from 93 to 2003. Does make some changes. First of all, it excludes up to $75,000 of qualifying value. The old provision, or the one we used to have, had a $25,000 and $50,000 exclusion, so this one is a little different. But the old provision had a two-tier, and this one is only one tier. So you have to have a house that's at least 50 years old, and then they can qualify for up to a $75,000 exclusion. It has the same provision that it's only on homes that don't exceed $400,000 estimated market value. Mm-hmm. And then the improvements have to be at least $15,000 for a single project or in any 1 year to be eligible. And you can have two projects or two improvements maybe added. And then the exclusion is for 10 years, so that is the same as the old program was. But it comes back on in either 2 years or 3 years, depending on how much value was excluded. And so it's streamlined somewhat from the old program, but much of the same administration, and it still terminates when the property is sold or reclassified, or so it has much of the same similarities as this old house, but administratively it would be simpler than the other one.
Madam Chair, was this an amendment?
Nope.
Senator Bach, this is the citizens. The citizens brought this to us. They like this old house, and they wanted to make a comeback. And we understand, Senator Bach, that there's problems for assessors with that. We understand that. And we want to work to make this work. Representative Marquardt can speak to the citizens of Minnesota who asked us to bring back this old house. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are the people's body, of course, on this side. And this was one of the six in the citizens' omnibus bill, and we actually had a person come in and testify on this one. So there'll be other provisions on the citizens, but I think this is the first one that we have to.
Could you point them out first when we get to them? Because we'd like
sure will.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
We realize that you're much closer to the people, and we'd like to know what the people are thinking.
And we want to remind the Senate that, yes, we are. You're right, because we're on the ballot next year, Senator, and we're listening. We want you to listen as closely as we do.
Senator Squire, they're probably knocking more doors this next summer than we are.
You know, I have
they're started already.
Senator Bach, you know, if I may, I want to tell the other conferees here about your door knocking, if I can. Do you
only
know what I'm going to say?
Express it accurately.
Well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was a freshman, I actually officed by Senator Bach and got to know him pretty well, and Senator Bach would say to me, "Oh, you don't need to go door knocking." And he once said to me, "I door knocked once, but I called first before I came up." No, is that accurate, Senator Bach?
It was Ray Bush, who's now deceased, in Babbitt, and he was the president of the senior citizens in Babbitt, so he was an important person to talk to in Babbitt. And yes, I called him first before I went over.
Yes, and
didn't want to disturb him and his wife.
And Senator Larson and I and Senator Skoy were all freshmen, and Senator Larson and I were door knocking day and night. I don't know what Senator Skoy was doing, but I still remember that story. I still remember you telling me not to worry about that.
Representative Lancheski, tell the story about the door knocking you did when you found a young fellow in the yard.
Oh, that's an awful story. You really want me to tell that story? It's not a funny story. Maybe another time. Well, Senator Bach does know that story. I did had the unfortunate experience of finding someone who had passed away in their yard mowing the lawn. And it was very sad indeed. And it was in the off year. It wasn't a campaign year. And I remember many people thought that lots of us, like Senator Larson and I, actually didn't door knock in the off year, but we did. And that was the year people found out it was true that some of us door knocked, not even a campaign year. And it was very unfortunate. He had had a heart attack while he was mowing his lawn, and I found him in his yard. It was very sad for the neighborhood. But we all have had those tragic experiences where we catch someone at a door, or we catch someone whose heart is broken, or they're in a very difficult situation. And that was a sad, sad moment. And I had forgotten about it. Hadn't thought about it in a while. So, yes, thank you.
How's my memory?
Your memory's very good. How's my memory?
Pretty darn accurate.
We're not that old yet.
You're not.
Ms. Baker.
She doesn't have reading glasses yet. Can you imagine that?
We're going to get big spreadsheets.
You must have had surgery on
really
your
big spreadsheets. Like a big spreadsheet so we can all read them. Ms. Baker.
The next provision, Section 9, requires each county to forward to the Department of Revenue applications for participation in Green Acres program that the county has denied, and a list of property owners who have requested an application and were denied. And this is just a two-year program for 07 and 08 assessments. And then the department needs to compile a list of denials with the reasons for denials and report or file an annual report to the legislature for those 2 years to the House and Senate. This came about because there was legislators, one in particular, who was finding that the county assessor said, you can't file Green Acres because we don't have it in our county. And it's not a choice of whether or not you have it if, in fact, property has a highest and best and an ag value. And so this was to try and get at an accountability issue because the Department of Revenue, when we talked to them, said we really don't know if it's happening out there or where it's happening or if it's happening to what degree. And so this requires people that have gone in and asked for it and can't get it from an accountability. So.
Senator Bach, I think you guys are going a little different direction here, and we appreciate some of that tightening. Representative Otremba has had a concern about this for a very long time. Mm-hmm. She's carried a number of different bills, and she has given us pretty compelling testimony, and maybe we need to talk to her a little bit, where she believes there have been instances where the county has denied entrance into Green Acres or has even at times said Green Acres doesn't exist. And so we want to, we believe Representative Otremba, and we want to address the concern that she has in trying to assist her constituents. Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, and I think Representative Otremba might have a very valid point in that Green Acres has not been uniformly applied across the state. That is part of what the Senate is doing, and we're to that provision now, is trying to tighten up the criteria. We did work with the assessors on this with the understanding that if we did tighten this up and make it a workable program, that it would be implemented statewide. I understand that there might be some issues that we have to address in the metropolitan area with some of the current Green Acres folks, but we think that this is an important component of our overall property tax bill, and as we get into the rural lands and the seasonal rec provision, that we have to see how they all work together. And I think pretty well if we're able to make some headway.
Senator Skoy, and are you referencing the Metro Ag Preserves part as well? Because I think that's another area kind of ripe for discussion, and I know I'm sure the Property Tax Division in the Senate must have, if not the full tax committee, must have gone through all these reports that we went through that the Department of Revenue produced, which we thought, and some were a year old, we thought we should not ignore them. We have a lot of provisions in our bill to address some of those problems, but we do, I think, agree that these programs seem to be really problematic and they're not uniform, so I don't know that we necessarily disagree with where the Senate's going, but we do have to address Representative Otremba's concern. Representative Marquardt, did you want to add to?
Oh, I think you. Well, Madam Chair, that's exactly right. It's because of the lack of uniformity among the state, whereas Ms. Baker said, some county basically were telling people we don't do Green Acres. But I think this is a good way to do it, is to try to tighten things up too. I think that if could be assessors could do it across the state would be very beneficial. It looks like your attempt is trying to do that.
Senator Skoy.
And Madam Chair, what I was referring to with regard to the metropolitan area, I think that the Green Acres in these more developed areas has a little different intent maybe than it is in rural areas, and we would need to explore that a little bit. And I heard from Senator Olson, who is actually a participant in this program, and I think she's from Minnetrista, and she has had some input. So I would have to take those thoughts into consideration as we go forward.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what Senator Skoy is proposing here has a lot of merit to get that value and gives it a better definition. But I think one of the issues that Representative Otremba has is almost like a Blue Waters issue. I think with some of the property that she's in her district, I don't know that where Senator Skoy is going with this is going to get to her issue. So maybe those two have to marry up some way.
I agree. Mr. Paulson, did you want to tell us exactly? We're kind of discussing the Senate provision here, but you want to walk us through it?
Madam Chair, the Senate provisions are in Section 13 through 15 of Article 5. The income requirements are changed under current law. It's an either-or situation. Either 33 1/3% of family income must be derived from agricultural production, or the production income must be $300 plus $10 per tillable acre of the property. The Senate bill is changing that so that rather than or, it's an and. In one of the three preceding years, 25% of family income must be derived from agricultural production, and production income must be at least $300 plus $10 per acre for all acres. So it's being changed from tillable acres to all acres. The or becomes an and. The percent of family income is actually reduced from 33 to 25%. In order to qualify, they'd have to meet both those tests. Section 14 provides a reference to gross income provided on federal Schedule F. And then Section 15 provides that Green Acres deferment does not apply to special assessments of watershed districts and drainage authorities.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, and for the folks that are going to work with us on this and try to come up with workable language, I will bring to you the issue that has come to my attention that I don't exactly have figured out in the language, and that's how you deal with rental land for farmers. It's a problem, something we're going to have to think about. So if you guys have some thoughts, happy to entertain.
Senator Bach, you know, I think this is a good time to raise an issue that I don't think I got to talk to you about, but I would like to. I think that as conferees express interest in different areas, I think it would be helpful to have subgroups figure out some of these pieces if you're amenable to that. I mean, we certainly have a few members on both sides here on this issue who know this issue. Probably could just get it done with some input and come back to us with a solution. Would you be open to working some of the issues that way?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ms. Baker.
Section 10 is a provision that was Representative Haas, and he had a situation where, under current law, a county can grant an abatement to property that's been unintentionally or accidentally destroyed if 50% or more of it is uninhabitable or unusable. But what he found, or what happened, was it was caused by arson and vandalism. And so this language really just extends that to the arson and vandalism if committed by someone other than the owner. And the owner has to make written application, and this is just a local option at the county for the county to grant an abatement. And it's retroactive, I should say. To some degree, it's for calendar year payable 06, because I think there were three or four homes that somebody had come in and just burned down. And this is what the bill was intended to address up in Cass County.
Madam Chair, Section 19 of the Senate is the same provision with a slight difference in language.
The next provision, Section 11, eliminates relative homesteads for non-ag properties other than those that were approved prior to July 1, 2007. Under current law, residential real estate that's occupied and used for purposes of a homestead by a relative can be granted homestead status as if they were owner-occupied, and you can see there's quite a list of all the various relatives. This was a provision of Representative Loeffler's, and it was to some degree after a discussion by, you have a provision farther on that had to do with rental registrations in the city of Minneapolis, and this was her way of trying to address that issue instead of the rental registration. And I don't know, maybe one of the members wants to say something on that.
Well, Representative Dabney, Representative Marquardt, I know this is a concern for some parts of the state. Representative Dabney.
I would imagine this is a concern for any number of college towns in the state where the trend maybe starting a decade back was rather than help your child out when they went off to college was to buy a house, allow them to occupy it, and then rent out rooms in the house to their friends and hope that the market would escalate and you'd be able to sell the house when they were done with college at a profit. Worked well for the families, often, though, led to over-occupancy of the house and problems for the local neighborhood and the long-term residents in the area. So this is an attempt to respond to that and the negative impact that can have on the quality of life in those areas.
Thank you for that. Representative Marquardt?
No, he's explained it. So.
And we'd have nothing similar in the Senate, correct?
Madam Chair, there's nothing directly comparable. On page 28 of the summary, the Senate has Section 21 that was referenced, and that is the relative homestead registration provision. Basically, it just requires registration with the city if the city or the population over 25,000.
So this is page 28, Section 21.
Section 21, yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you for that.
Do we know, Madam Chair, how many potential properties we're impacting with this change?
I do not. We can try to get some information back. Mr. Hines, Ms. Baker, how many properties affected by this?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, the House provision is just prospective, so it doesn't take any away. All it says is that we aren't going to create any more new ones. So it doesn't, it's not a look back kind of thing, and so, you know, but it just won't create any more in the future.
Madam Chair.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be advantageous that if this provision were to stay in play that you still continue to look at, it sounds like the issue is probably that of a youth putting people in houses and things like that, that maybe there's an age limitation on this so that people would still have the ability to put their parents in a home and take care of it. Your parents are 75 years old or 70 years old and you're putting in a home and paying the taxes on it. I think that's the basis of what this was set up for originally. So maybe just an age factor would solve some of that problem.
Kids.
I think we're just trying to solve a problem here for our community. It's having a lot of problems. And I don't know if you've heard about it in the Senate, but we've heard about it. Representative Kahn has had bills, I think, similar in the past, the area around the university. Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, in response to Representative Simpson, if you wanted to, I mean, you could change the definition of relative just to be parent or step-parent. I mean, the list that's here is child and stepchild there is grandparent and grandchild. So just choose which ones of them that you're, you know, interested in if that's the issue. So that would be another option.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We can work on that. You know, I thought we could go through sections 12, 13, and 14 and call it a night. So if that's all right with Senator Bach, which he's said it's okay by him, Ms. Baker, section 12.
Section 12 has a few different things going on, and at the first one clarifies the requirement to have at least 40 acres to qualify for special ag homestead. And the issue was brought in that because of a road, it was like 39.4 or something like that. And the issue was that the assessor says, I'm sorry, but you didn't have 40 acres. And so what this does is this language that is undivided government lots and correctional 40s takes care of any of those easement type of issues or road access or any of those places where it takes maybe part of an acre or maybe even a full acre, but at least it addresses that it might be a little less than 40 acres that you actually have. The second thing was, and that was Representative Hamilton's, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
The second provision was Representative Junkies, and that's a provision where the person had less than 40 acres, but it was used very, very exclusively and intensively. It was an actual hog operation. And so there was no question that it was a farm and that the person was a farmer, and yet as a result of the 40 acres did not qualify. And the assessor said, I'm sorry, I know you're a farm, you smell like a farm, it looks like a farm, but it is not 40 acres. So what this is it says it's at least 20 acres if it's exclusively and intensively. And the third was Representative Markwartz. And this came out of the division, and this is eliminating the requirement of the four townships or cities or combinations thereof. And in that this case, what it is it has to either be in the same county or in a county that's contiguous to the county. And so you're looking at an area that's a little bit bigger, but you aren't talking about just the four townships or cities, because that distance now with moving machinery around and buying land, that it makes, you know, that people are buying land that's a little bit farther to move their equipment and have their farm a little larger.
Madam Chair, the Senate does not have comparable provisions.
Baker.
Section 13 is a provision that was brought to, I think, Representative Markwart. It was added in committee on, and I think it was the County Association, wasn't it? The officers. And what this does is if you have improvements that are constructed on property that's leased or rented, where you have a manufactured home or sectional structure or park trailer, and it's like a storage shed or a deck, that if it's less than a certain value, it should be exempted. And it's been $500 for quite a while, and this raises it to $1,000. And so it's a pretty nominal. They said they hate to send a tax statement out for, you know, $3. The cost of sending the statement out is more than what the tax is. So,
Madam Chair?
Yeah, Senator Bach.
Ms. Baker?
Yes.
The province of Ontario has come to the same conclusion. My property taxes in Canada doubled from $3 to $6. And I wondered why they ever sent property tax statements off from Toronto for $3.12, but they doubled them, so it must pay for the paperwork now.
Mm. Madam Chair, the Senate has the same provision.
Madam Chair, the next section is the 4D classification, and this decreases the percentage of units needed for a property to qualify from the 75% down to 20%.
Madam Chair, for the Senate, it's from 75% to 25%.
And then there's another provision, which is the same in the Senate, that allows financial assistance can come from local governments in addition to the state and federal. However, the House has another provision that was added by Representative Hillstrom, and that has to do with
Section 15.
I'm sorry. You want me to stop?
Yeah, we're
I'm
not
going
to do that. We're
okay.
not going to get to that
okay.
tonight.
Sorry.
If I may, because I think that one's a little more controversial. It'll
okay.
take some discussion. But I do know Senator Moore has worked on Section 14. Over the years, knows a lot about the whole 4D issue, and she's a resource for us. So, Senator Moy, you might want to take a look at our language in Section 15 for when we keep going through this another day, because we've heard a lot of feelings either way on this. Senator Moy.
Madam Chair, I'm very well aware of the discussions that have taken place around Section 15, and in fact, Representative Hillstrom and I have actually talked to each other about this. So.
Okay, good. Good. That'll be helpful in having us think through what how we might be able to work Section 15 through. And members, we're going to stop the walking through tonight and give the gavel over to the Senate for tomorrow. We do want to, Senator Bach and I have agreed to ask Ms. Zoff and Mr. Michael to work on Article 10, 11, 12, and 13 for the conferees. We are going to trust you to begin to work through the department provisions and let us know what's same and similar so we don't have to spend a lot of conference committee time on these really technical pieces, and we can take them one by one as it breaks apart. And of course, working with Commissioner Ines is here and Mr. Manson. So that's our intention on those articles. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I just have a quick question of Senator Bach on that apprenticeship program, Section 8. Would the facility have to be used exclusively for apprentices? What I'm thinking of is, as you know, quite familiar with some of our tech college programs, and they will place, I'll use one industry as an example, apprentices in an auto program, and they'll work in an auto dealership. They're often working for pay, so I wasn't just sure with your summary what the impact there would be. And if you don't know now, we can talk about it.
I think the intent is that when the apprentices come to participate in the schooling, that they're not actually paid for that time. Now, they do work during the day out in the field for an employer, whether it's one of the crafts, have most of the apprenticeship programs. But they get paid during the day at their regular job, but then they come and do their schooling either on a day that they're laid off or maybe in the evening or whatever. But in most of the cases of the crafts, they actually have a job where they work for an employer during the day, but they're not paid for going to school.
Madam Chair, that's somewhat the situation with some of these auto programs, but I'm just using that one as an example. They'll take their courses at the tech college, then they'll work during the day for an auto dealer. Mm-hmm. The auto dealer sponsors a apprenticeship slot for them. Sometimes there'll be several within a dealership. So you're saying that they wouldn't qualify for the exemption then?
Well, is the tech school paying property taxes?
No, I'm talking about the hands-on experience is in the auto dealership.
That's not my intent, is that the auto dealer would get it. Only the apprenticeship school would get it, where they could do their in the...
Where the classroom activity takes place.
Yeah, the apprenticeship standards, and I'm familiar with the state standards, not so much federal, but Minnesota is a state apprenticeship, not a federal state. Like North Dakota's got federal programs. Minnesota has state programs. The state standards require in most crafts 144 hours of classroom a year. So what I think I'm trying to aim at is that we go look at the place where those apprentices do their classroom training, and that would be the facility, and argue that that is a classroom like any other classroom, just as if they were doing their related training at the technical college, who doesn't pay any property taxes. Except that they're doing their related training here at an apprenticeship school.
Madam Chair, I didn't mean to delay it. That clarifies it. I think. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Senator Bach, what time do you want to meet tomorrow?
Madam Chair, we're through 10.5 pages already.
Well, Senator Bach, though, Ms. Zoff and Mr. Michael are going to get us through another 20.
I think that would be very helpful, considering there's 109 in this side-by-side.
I think the property tax article is the most important part. I think Representative Mark Horton and Senator Skoy know that's the most important part, so we had to take a little while there. What time would you like to meet?
I believe our office has sent out a notice a half hour after the last body adjourns. Tomorrow, I believe the Senate is going in at 11.
And Senator Bach, is this room going to be locked? Can members leave everything here?
This will be locked up.
Okay.
And I would intend so that people watching can make dinner plans. A guy my size is very conscious about not skipping meals. My intent would be to go till 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Because I have dinner plans.
Well, this is a good start then. And it's an honor, and it's great to be here with the Senate and with all your staff and everybody else, and we're going to make progress. With that, we are adjourned.